Hey, you're listening to Terry Telford from thebusinessprofessional.com, and today we are extremely lucky to have none other than J. Conrad Levinson on the call. Now, just in case you haven't heard of J. Conrad Levinson, he is the father of guerrilla marketing, and he is a true, true marketing legend. He's a real veteran of the marketing and advertising industry. Now, he's worked with two of the world's greatest advertising agencies. He's been with J. Walter Thompson, and he's been with Leo Burnett. So he is the real deal. This is no smoke and mirrors. This guy is for real. If you if you've been out there and you've read Guerrilla Marketing or any of the other, I think 31, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's about 31 books or so that Jay's got with the Guerrilla Marketing series. We'll get the details from Jay in just a second. But if you read anything from Jay, you know his stuff works. This is a guy that you can read the book, apply what he says, and this is not theory. This is practice. This is the real stuff. Now, the other thing that's kind of cool is Jay also worked with Playboy, and he's written columns and articles for Entrepreneur Magazine, for Inc. Magazine, and the list goes on and on. This guy is absolutely amazing. I can't tell you how excited I am to be able to talk to Jay and have him share all the information that he's going to be sharing with us today. Now, even though that he's got an absolutely completely impressive resume, Jay's real claim to fame, the real tipping point for Jay, was the Guerrilla Marketing book. That was really the tipping point. So instead of me going on and on, without further ado, I'd like to welcome the father of guerrilla marketing, I think the mentor of millions, J. Conrad Levinson. I'd like to say thank you so much for being with us here today, Jay.
Well, thank you, Terry, very much. You sure know how to make a guy feel good.
Hey, I'm just recapping your history, my friend.
Well, I'll do everything in my power to live up to it, but everything you've said is the darn, is the God's honest truth.
Awesome. I mean, I basically touched on your background, but can you kind of fill us in? How did everything progress from you? Where did you come from, and how did you get to where you are today?
I started, I'll start at the real beginning.
Yeah.
I was a counterintelligence agent. I was a member of America's spy corps. I was looking for spies in the United States, finding them, and then I'd have to write up a report of my investigation, and since all my investigations were about people upon whom derogatory information had turned up, I got to juicy things about very exciting James Bond-type investigations. And you know, people at infiltrate meetings, but it turns out that to me, the best thing about that work that I was doing was the writing of the reports of investigation. I really got off on writing, and I was in the Army at this time,
uh-huh.
And I was going to get out of the Army, and I really wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I was going to go back to law school, which was my bad idea. But instead, I loved writing so much, just these reports of spy-type investigations, that I started thinking of a job in writing, and I knew I couldn't get a job as a book writer because you can't make money writing a book. And I had written for the college newspaper in Boulder, Colorado, and I knew I didn't like the literary styles practiced by newspapers. Somebody told me that I should look for a job at an advertising agency, and I had never thought of that. I'd never taken any courses in advertising or marketing, but that sounded like a good thing to me. And so I got a job in an agency, but not as a writer. They don't hire writers without experience. Instead, they hired me as a secretary. They did that because I was typing 80 words a minute, and I was willing to go to shorthand school, and that was something that made me very much appreciated about this small advertising agency in San Francisco where I was working. Well, that led to me eventually becoming a copywriter in that agency, and then another, and then I went to Chicago, and sure enough, Mr. Hugh Hefner hired me to be the promotion copy director of Playboy, writing pieces for advertisers to advertise in Playboy, writing pieces for subscribers to subscribe to this new magazine, and writing ads about Playboy itself, like the series What Sort of Man Reads Playboy, that was my series, and writing things for Playboy products. After doing that for a little over a year, I was getting bored only because I had to write the same voice every time, and I would have been criminally insane if I had told Efter, hey, let's change the voice that I'm writing in. No, I'm getting bored. I knew that what he was doing was working. Playboy, Efter was a wonderful boss. Wow, talk about the ideal boss. He sure was. But I couldn't stay there because for a creative type like me, writing in the same voice over and over wasn't really going to cut it. So I left, and I got a job at an advertising agency. Then another, which finally became Leo Burnett. And Leo Burnett sent me to London, and that was a great 3 years getting to be in London and travel everywhere in Europe. And then I came back to the United States, and Leo Burnett, who was really, really close to me, he had died while I was away. And I noticed the agency had changed its personality. It changed a lot of the ways that it was when it was then the best advertising agency in the world. It really was. Anybody who was practicing advertising in the 60s would agree with that. And it was just it was in Leo's shadow that we ran the agency, but it had changed. So I went to work at J. Walter Thompson. That time was the largest advertising agency in the world. And luckily, they let me work in Chicago, which was my home base. I was raised there, and that was a lot of fun. However, I remember once waiting for a bus, and it was 13 below zero. And I remembered that month, it was February, it never went above zero that month, any day. And here I thought that I had achieved my lifetime ambition with a vice presidency, a corner office, working on these wonderfully exciting accounts. And so I asked J. Walter if they would transfer me to a place with better climate. They said, but I said, well, like San Francisco, you got a good big office there. And they said, you know, Jay, you've been doing a real good job, and you've been really getting very closely connected to Quaker Oats and Alberto VO5, and they would resent it if we transferred you. We'll give you a big raise, but we can't transfer you. So that really meant you got to stand and wait for buses when it's 13 below zero and for the rest of your life. So that didn't appeal to me, although everything in the agency world did. I put out feelers for a job in San Francisco, and I got an offer. But at the time I gave my notice, Quaker Oats and Alberto Culver said, the VO5 people, they say, we don't care where you live as long as you continue writing for us. And so I accepted that. And the advertising agency that I was going to work at in San Francisco, I told them I would be willing to take the job, but just on a once-a-week basis. I'd come in once a week, and they only had to pay me a third of what they were going to pay me, but I'd do 100% of all the assignments they were going to give me. So that sounded good to them. So here I was now living in San Francisco. I was doing work for Alberto Culver, for Alberto VO5, for Quaker Oats, and for this advertising agency. And I was beginning to pick up little clients because of the new industries in San Francisco. The computer industry was pretty brand new. And the solar energy industry was new, and water vents were just making themselves known. And so here I was, keeping really busy, working on those clients, and it dawned on me that I was only working 3 days a week. I was working from my home. And the reason that I worked 3 days a week was because I didn't have any memos to read, any committees to hold meetings to invite me to. I didn't have those wonderful people working at agencies coming into my office to shoot the breeze. And I realized that being free from those distractions, I was able to work a three-day week. And so I thought, there's nothing special about me. And most people are trapped in a commuter lane, and they're working 5 or 6 days a week. What they was dictated to by somebody above them, whereas I got to get rid of my alarm clock, which one of the first things I wanted to do was get rid of that, and only do the assignments that I wanted to do, and wear what I want to wear, and work really from my office overlooking Cisco Bay. So after I really faced up to the fact that anybody could do it, I thought I should write a book about this. So I wrote a book called Earning Money Without a Job. People said, "You can't write earning money without working." I said, "What do you mean without working? You've got to work your tail off." But don't need a standard 9-to-5 job with somebody else calling all the shots. That book, which was a pretty big seller, became the basis of a course I was invited to teach at Berkeley, at the University of California in Berkeley, their extension division. They said, Jay, don't call us earning money without a job. It'll make up our professors think it's a get-rich-quick scheme, and we know that's not what it is. They said, how about alternatives to the 9-to-5 job? I said, sounds good to me. So I started teaching alternatives to the 9-to-5 job to young kids in Berkeley with long hair and big eyes, absolutely empty pockets. And I wrote a follow-up book when people said, your concepts of earning money without a job are great, but why don't you give us some ideas of the ways that people are doing it? So I subscribed to a clipping service. I asked people to send me articles on new and unusual ways that people are earning money around the world. And my second book was called 555 Ways to Earn Extra Money, which led to even more people attending my sold-out class in Berkeley. One day I get to class, students ask me this question. They said, Jay, you know we have good ideas, and you know that we don't know beans about marketing. Is there a book that you could recommend to us for people with big dreams but empty bank accounts? I said, oh, I'll be happy to come up with a book recommendation for you. After class, I went to the library in Berkeley. I couldn't find any books on that topic, so I went across the bay to Stanford's library. Same thing. I went to the public libraries of the big cities in California. There were no books in the early 80s on marketing for people with budgets of less than $300,000 a month, and those certainly were not my students. They didn't have anything like $300,000 a month. Still, I had promised them I'd recommend a book. So I put together all the things I'd done for my two clients in the solar energy industry, waterbeds, computers, the original computer advertising, were talk about asleep at the wheel. They were talking to each other, and you couldn't really understand a computer ad. And I knew that they needed my help. So I had made a list of all the ways that people could market without investing much money. And that's a great and noble concept, but it's a heck of a bad title for a book. So I decided to call it Guerrilla Marketing, because guerrillas want conventional goals, but they have to go about the attaining of them with unconventional means. I thought that'll do it, so I retitled the book to Guerrilla Marketing. I wrote it for my students, Terry, just for my students. I never knew the book would take on a life of its own. I never knew it would be published in 44 languages. You're talking to a guy now who does not understand 43 editions of his own book. The book has now sold 15 million copies, but I only wrote it for the 100 kids in my class. Those kids in my class, the ones with the long hair and Levi's, went out to found Apple and make huge inroads in the big Silicon Valley companies, from Hewlett-Packard, Delphi, to Alpha Graphics. Many, if not most, of the Fortune 500 firms from Silicon Valley were students in my class, and some of them are still running their billion-dollar companies according to the same simple seven-sentence marketing plan that I outlined for them. So that book, with no help from me and no planning, and here am I. I'm a big one on saying that the real key to marketing is start with a plan and then commit to that plan. It's only a two-step process, those two things. But here am I being hypocritical because I didn't have a plan. What I really did instead was I responded to needs. When I wrote the book, Earning Money Without a Job, I was responding to the need of a lot of unemployment, of recession, and people standing in line to get a job someplace for the same thing was going to happen to them. So to protect them from their parents' work ethic, that's why I wrote Earning Money Without a Job in 555 Ways. And then when the kids in the class were doing what I said but didn't know how to get it off the ground in marketing, I wrote that book for them. And so there's really 57 books now that I've written. And they're all in response to a need. My publisher, Houghton Mifflin, who publishes Mark Twain and Henry David Thoreau, they said, there's a lot going on online. Is it possible for you to write a book about marketing online? And I said, well, sure, I'll learn about it, because I was just getting my teeth cut in that. But I wrote that. They didn't like the word internet. I wanted to call it guerrilla marketing on the internet. And my publisher, they said, you can't use a new word in a title. People don't know what internet means. I said, but everybody will know what it means.
Now, what year was this that nobody knew about the internet?
This was in the mid-1980s.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay, this is real pioneer stuff.
This is real pioneer stuff, and the people all would have had the inclination, and I was living in the place which was hotbed of technology, and I was doing work for companies like Adobe and even Microsoft, who was not in the San Francisco area, but I was doing work for these high-tech companies. Bill Gates said, you know, Jay, if I say something, they say, well, that's Bill Gates talking. Of course he's going to say that. He said, but if you say it, they're going to say, oh, boy, Jay Levinson does that. So he asked me to write a book about technology, and I wrote Guerrilla Marketing with Technology. So the books I write are responses to people's needs. Consultants, there are so many of them. So we wrote Guerrilla Marketing for... I'm a fast typist, and I love, absolutely love to write. My favorite thing on earth is skiing, and when I ski, I think of writing. And my other favorite thing is writing, and when I write, I think of skiing. The two are hardly connected with each other, but those are the two places where my passion it burns very, very hot. And so that's how I got into the writing of other books. And when you write books, you get speaking invitations. And I didn't have a clue or a plan or experience doing that. So, but I was getting pretty fancy offers to give a talk. And so I started, so I got a speaking agent, because God knows I did not want to make all the reservations and plane reservations and work out all the details with the sponsoring organization. So I started giving talks to the point that I said, okay, I'm giving 4 talks a month, and that's too much. Let's cut it down to 3. And then I said, let's cut it down to 2. And I was earning more money than I had earned as a senior vice president and creative director at the largest advertising agency on earth. I was still only working a 3-day week. I've been doing that since 1971, and I don't veer from that. I work very hard on the Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays that I work. And the reason I work so hard is I know that my weekend begins Wednesday at about 6 o'clock. And I don't want to miss a long weekend. I can get more time in for skiing, more time in for running the rivers of the West, more times in for exploring the national parks. And so I was leading a very good life, still am. It's better now than it ever has been. But that's the way it all came about, as the response to a need. And then when people started inviting me to give talks, me saying, well, sure. And it's easy to give a talk if you feel passion about your topic. Because, you know, when you're in a public forum like that, and there's no 500 or 1,000 people listening to you, they don't care about you. And they don't care about themselves. All they really care about is the topic. And if you can burn bright with your passion about the topic, speaking is easy. I know that the greatest fear in the world is the fear of public speaking. And I also know that the second greatest fear is the fear of death. So if you follow that reasoning, it means that if you're invited to speak, you're better off in the casket than delivering the eulogy. But a major, major talent in the 21st century is the ability to speak on your feet and to be a fascinating speaker, and the ability to type, certainly the ability to write. It didn't used to be like that. You didn't have to be able to write, and you certainly have to be able to type. And there weren't a lot of forums for people to give talks, and most of the talks were boring. But now there's great books out on speaking, and I keep saying, if you feel the passion for the topic, it all happens automatically. So that's the way my life has progressed. Let's see, my wife and I sold our home in San Francisco, where we lived for 35 years. We sold it about 5 years ago. It was a beautiful home overlooking San Francisco Bay. And she said, you know, the kids are grown. She said, and we ought to do something else. We ought to sell the house. So I swallowed hard and said, okay, 35 years in the same house. It's hard to say goodbye to that house. But Jeannie, my wife, and now my co-author, She said, why don't we get an RV? I said, I don't want to live in a trailer. She says, don't think of trailers. Think of bridal suites in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. An RV that's just like that, like John Madden's tour bus, or like spoiled actor or actress's RV. It's a marvelous recreational vehicle, and it's got a washer and a dryer and 5 TV sets and satellite television and computer workstations. And I'm probably leaving a lot out, but when you walk in, it's more of your breath being taken away because it's so beautiful. And luckily, my wife didn't like to drive it, so what a break for me. I got to drive it. It's like permission to play with your favorite toy all the time. And she'd hook up to the sewer, to the power, to the water, to the cable TV. And so it was a perfect division of labor. And we spent four years exploring the national parks and staying as long as we want, and visiting our kids and our grandkids around the country, and just having the time of our life. We expected it to be really good, but it was way better than we expected. It was so much fun. We learned, and everybody, I think, learns, that it doesn't matter what you drive or where you go. It only matters who you're with. And so I was with the love of my life, so that was really easy for the two of us to get along and spend our time in all the paradises that are available by motor coach, by motorhome, in this country and in Canada. As you know, we spoke before, and Jeannie and I just spent 8 days in Nova Scotia. That was a real high for us. We didn't have the RV because after driving the RV for 4 years, we realized that whenever we spend a lot of time in Orlando, because we have a lot of family there. Uh-huh. We have 26 grandkids. Wow. And most of them live in Orlando. And we always, when we come here to visit, we park at the side of a lake. And we thought, we're always paying rent to stay at the side of a lake. Why don't we buy some land at the side of a lake and park our RV there? We picked out land, decided to buy it, told our real estate agent that's what we're going to do, and the papers were just about ready to be signed when he said, hey, G and Jeannie, he said, just a few hundred yards away from where you have that land, there's another piece of land on the same lake with the same view, and it has to have a brand new house on it, a four-bedroom house, and it's same price as you were going to pay for the raw land. And it's only 3 years old, that house. Would you consider getting a house? And we hadn't even talked about it, but we did know that the only downside of owning an RV is you can't house guests stay over, because there's just no room, even in a Ritz-Carlton type RV. So we said yes, and well, we still have the RV, which we're going to use for shorter trips, and we're going to park it on our land in a few weeks. But we're pretty much settled now on a beautiful piece of land overlooking a lake right near Orlando and Disney World. God, why do all of our guests want to go to Disney World? Well, I guess. So we're getting a little tired of Mickey. But we're not getting tired of being with our family all the time. We're bringing them aboard slowly to help with the business. Like my speaking agent is now my daughter, Amy. She has a master's in public administration, and up till now her mission was to save the world, and she's been doing it, and she realized if you're in the world-saving business, you don't get much money. So we told her that she can continue to save the world, but if she worked booking talks for me, handling all customer service issues, we could pay her far more than she was earning while saving the world, and she'd be saving the world by teaching people how to be self-sufficient through marketing. Because I said, not a lot of people already know about marketing. They make it so complicated, and we make it so simple. So Amy started doing that, and because she loves her mommy and daddy, when she gets a speaking date for me, she tells the person who's inviting me, we'd like you to tack on to that date 5 days of vacation in the nicest resort in your town.
Excellent.
And so they always say yes. That's how we got to spend all that time in Nova Scotia. Wherever we go, she arranges all these 5-day vacations kept on to my my speaking tours. And so she does that. We just hired our son because he loves selling. He's very good at selling. And we're creating a lot of guerrilla marketing products, courses, and the Guerrilla Marketing Association, and special trainings. And we need a person to help sell that. And sure enough, our son Jeremy wants to do that, can do, has proven that he does that. And so now this is like nepotism central. We have two of our kids working in our business right now so far. They're really pulling their weight, and it's really fun for us to deal with them on a professional basis. So that kind of brings you up to speed. Here we are in a town called DeBary, which is outside Orlando. Last year, Entrepreneur Magazine asked my wife and I to write a book together. We said, what kind of book? They said, you know, guerrilla marketing has been around a long time, and a lot of people want to do it. They don't know how to get started. Why don't you write a book called Jane Jeannie Levinson's Startup Guide to Guerrilla Marketing? So we said okay to that, and we wrote it. That was hard. It took us about 6 or 7 months to write a book together, but we just finished it last week. We finished all the editing and saw the galleys, and it comes out in early January of 2008. And it's really a good book, and it was really fun for me to work with my wife. I've never worked with my wife except in the business we ran. It wasn't, she was doing the business end. She was doing the financial end. She also booked stocks for me before our daughter Amy got involved in doing that. But now I knew she was brilliant all along, and I knew that at one point she sold my wife more swimming pools than anybody in the United States.
Wow.
And so she knew business, and she knew marketing, and so it was a privilege for me to help to write a book with her and let her bring her own passion and enthusiasm and information to the party. Look, I've given since Jeannie and I have been married every talk, and that's a lot. She's been in the first row. She's been sitting in the front row, taking copious notes, though she's never heard of the talk before, and laughing at the good jokes, and probably laughing at the bad ones, too. But she's picked up a lot by osmosis, and she's now the president of Guerrilla Marketing. Brings us to where we are. Our plans for next year is we're going to put a lot of our books on CDs, because we've started it and we realize how many people just don't have the time to read, but they definitely have the time to commute or to drive someplace or fly someplace. And putting our books on CD is, again,